Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. On Wednesday, the House Judiciary Committee has its first hearing in the impeachment inquiry. It's a critical step forward as House Democrats seem determined to hold an impeachment vote before Christmas. The White House says it will not participate in this week's hearings, and congressional Republicans are in line with their forceful support of the president. Well, today we want to take a look at where this puts the Republican Party now. There are three crossroads looming for the GOP: the impeachment proceedings, the 2020 elections, and one day, sooner or later, the party post-President Trump. So this hour on Point, the impeachment process now and the GOP tomorrow. And you can join us, Republicans especially. What do you think of your party and its leadership at this moment? Has the GOP become the party of Donald Trump, and do you like it that way? Or when you see, for example, polling that shows that more Republicans think Donald Trump is a better president than was Abraham Lincoln, do you mourn the death of the party of Lincoln? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, in a couple of minutes, we'll be joined by two GOP strategists with very different views of their party right now. But first, Lisa Desjardins joins us from Washington. She covers news from the U.S. Capitol for PBS NewsHour. Lisa, welcome back to the program.
Oh, great to be here.
Okay, so let's start off with a little preview of all that is going to be happening this week. First of all, tell us more about what the White House counsel said in its response to the House Judiciary Committee about hearings that are set for day after tomorrow.
That's correct. This is a lengthy, well, I think it's four or five page response from Pat Cipollini, the White House counsel, railing against the process as they see it and saying that at the very least, they will not participate in this week's hearing, which is scheduled for Wednesday. We're told that that's going to be a hearing with some kind of academic and constitutional experts looking at what qualifies as impeachment in general. And what's interesting here, many things are interesting about this letter. But one is that the White House is not ruling out the idea of participating at a later point, perhaps with more hearings. Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has given the president until this Friday to declare whether he will call, whether he wants to call his own witnesses or not. And in this letter, the White House is saying they will respond to that separately by Friday. That is clearly something the White House is still deciding how they want to handle.
So the letter is really interesting because, as you said, Lisa, it really picks apart what it sees, or the White House counsel sees, as they're calling it a fundamentally unfair process. Everything from their objection that Wednesday's hearings are going to be held on the day they are, given that the president's going to be at that NATO summit.
Right. That's right. And also they rail against the hearings that have been held by the House Intelligence Committee, pointing out rightly that the president was not allowed any participation in those hearings. However, Democrats would counter and say the president's opportunity for participation is now in the House Judiciary Committee, that the House Intelligence Committee was an investigation and was not sort of the moment when Democrats think the president should have been involved. If you look at the parallel tracks with the Clinton impeachment, which is hard to do because they're very different circumstances, but the Democrats have a point that Clinton was allowed participation when House Judiciary took over. Of course, Republicans have a point that this was all discussion of what the president did or didn't do with House Intelligence and that the president was not allowed to participate.
Right. And I mean, you're bringing up the Clinton impeachment inquiry, which is really interesting because the White House counsel like spends half a page saying that this process, the current process, is not at all, in his mind, not at all like the impeachment inquiry of President Clinton, to the point where he said that witnesses were given 2.5 weeks notice to prepare. And he says that in this case, they've only got days. I mean, how different is it?
You know, I think it's like anything with Congress. It depends on your point of view. Mm-hmm. There are many parallels to the Clinton process, even including that one of the opening hearings for the Clinton process with the Judiciary Committee was an expert panel. But then you go and look a little bit deeper and you see the differences. The expert panel in the Clinton impeachment process, as the White House has pointed out, was given notice way ahead of time or a few weeks before this one was, and it was a much larger panel. There were 9 different experts, including former generals from the military, as well as judges, district judges were on that panel, and so were academics and lawyers. So it was a much larger panel, which is something that the president and Republicans think should happen. The expectation right now is that it will be 4 witnesses on Wednesday. Though, you know, Meghna, they haven't announced who those witnesses will be, and it's only 2 days ahead of time. By committee rules, the Judiciary Committee must announce who the witnesses are 24 hours ahead of the hearing, so tomorrow. But you know, we're getting really into go time, and we don't know who exactly is appearing yet.
They're supposed to be, as you mentioned, though, constitutional scholars. So what do the Democrats hope to get from this first day of hearings before the Judiciary Committee?
Speaking to a few Democrats and also looking back at Clinton, which really is part of their roadmap at the Clinton impeachment process, they want to show that what amounts to an impeachable offense exactly. And could, for example, using foreign aid as leverage with a foreign country to try and get an investigation of your political opponent, is that an impeachable offense? I think that will be the main question here. They will try and raise national security concerns about what the Trump administration did with Ukraine. They will also try and raise political concerns about the president's push for investigations of Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden. It will be a question of, is this an impeachable act or not?
Mm. Well, Lisa, let me just play here the voice of Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia. He's the top Republican on the House Judiciary Committee. And of course, as you mentioned, Lisa, the committee is chaired by Democrat Gerald Nadler of New York. But Representative Collins was on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and host Chris Wallace asked Collins if the GOP planned to call witnesses in the Judiciary Committee, and here's that exchange.
Will Republicans on the committee call for subpoena witnesses to testify? And if so, who are you going to ask to testify?
Oh, of course. We're going to testify. First and foremost, the first person who needs to testify is Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff is the author of this report. Adam Schiff has been the author of many things, a lot of them found to be false over the past couple of years, but he's going to be the author of this report.
So that's Congressman Doug Collins referencing Representative Adam Schiff, who's the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and talking about the report. I presume he's talking about the Intelligence Committee report, which could come out tomorrow.
That's right. We're told the committee's report on impeachment will be available to its members tonight, starting at 6 o'clock Eastern time. And most members will not be in town yet, but those who want to view it can, beginning tonight in a closed-door setting. It is not clear when we in the public and in the press will be able to see that report. Believe me, a lot of us are asking that question. We don't know how long it is. We don't know what evidence in this report they're going to point to from all of the hearings they had. And as Doug Collins says, Republicans don't know what's in it. We do expect that Republicans will present their own findings. I'm not clear yet what form that will take, but there will be some kind of alternate document or documents from Republicans, I think, rebutting what they expect in the Schiff report.
Okay. So, Lisa, tell us then, you've got your ear to the ground there on Capitol Hill. Do House Democrats, are they determined to hold an impeachment vote before Christmas?
Yes. That's an easy answer. They are. They feel like the evidence is overwhelming. And in fact, many Democrats say all you need is the memorandum or the partial transcript of the president's phone call with the Ukrainian president to show that there is an impeachable offense by the president. Democrats believe they've built their case and that they're ready to move forward to a vote. Right now, the thing they need to do the most is show due process to the president. And obviously, that's something the White House is kind of reckoning with, how they cooperate and if they cooperate.
Okay. And so then what are Republicans saying? Are they welcoming the rush? Because it seems as if, polling amongst the American people hasn't really provided a lot of clarity on how the American people feel.
You know, for Republicans, I think they have some mixed strategies when it comes to the timing. One issue is, of course, the U.S. Senate, that if the House does, in fact, vote out articles of impeachment, it would trigger a Senate trial. And there are real questions about how that timing works in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, had said a few months ago that he thought he could get a trial done by the end of the year. That is not something anyone is talking about anymore. It does look like a trial would start in January. I believe Republicans and Democrats in the Senate both do not want a lengthy process. They have different reasons for that. Some of that includes the 2020 election. But I think that there is a reason to think that both sides actually want this process to move along. For Democrats, they believe the longer that it takes, the more the public will kind of be confused and the water will get muddied by process. They want to stick to their main points about what they are accusing the president of doing.
Well, let's listen to a moment from the close of the House Intelligence Committee hearings late last month. And Lisa, I want to play you this for a specific reason. Here's Chairman Adam Schiff, Democrat, comparing what this political moment, as he sees it, to Watergate.
The difference between then and now is not the difference between Nixon and Trump. It's the difference between that Congress and this one. And so we are asking, where is Howard Baker? Where is Howard Baker? Where are the people who are willing to go beyond their party to look to their duty?
It's Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Lisa, we've just got about 30 seconds before the break, but there has been some discussion about, yes, there's a lot of forceful support coming from the GOP, vociferous support, but also when, you know, certain members of Congress talk off the record, they're saying different things. I mean, what's going on there?
I think the easiest way to see that divide in terms of the Capitol is House Republicans are really behind the president. They see him essentially as their party. He is not just the messenger. He is the message. Senate Republicans, many of whom have been in Congress longer, are less comfortable. But I do think, by and large, they are still supporting the president, but to a lesser degree.
Well, that is exactly what we're going to talk about for the remainder of the program. So, Lisa, stand by here for just a moment. We're talking about the GOP in this moment now as the impeachment inquiry proceeds and the future. What is the future? What does it look like for the Republican Party? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the impeachment inquiry now and the Republican Party tomorrow, as in the future. And we want to hear from you, Republicans especially, but Democrats too. What do you think of the Republican Party and its leadership at this moment? Has the GOP become the party of Donald Trump? And if you're a Republican, do you like it that way? Or, as I mentioned earlier in the hour, when you see, for example, polling that shows that more Republicans think Donald Trump is a better president than Abraham Lincoln, what does that say about the party that once considered itself the party of Lincoln? I'm joined today from Arlington, Virginia, by Lisa Desjardins. She covers news from the U.S. Capitol for PBS NewsHour. And joining us now from Atlanta, Georgia, is Seth Weathers. He's a Republican political consultant and digital strategist and founder of the political campaign agency Weathers Corp. He was Georgia State Director for the 2016 Trump campaign. Seth Weathers, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Landenburg, Pennsylvania, is Kim Alfano, Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim Alfano, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Magna. Hi.
So, Seth Weathers, let me just start with you here. How do you see GOP leadership in Congress right now? Do you see them moving in the right direction with their sort of public unwavering support for the president?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think that the party base absolutely supports them and even demand that of their elected officials right now. The impeachment process that's been taking place is a joke.
So tell me more that if the base is demanding it and members of Congress are providing that, is that the best way for the party to go regarding sort of what it wants to stand for?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe it wants to stand for the rule of law. And I think fighting against this sham impeachment process is a first step in that.
Hmm. So do you think – let me just ask you the question I'm sort of broadly asking listeners here. Is the GOP the party of Donald Trump now?
Well, it certainly is right now. And I think that, you know, anytime you've got a very strong president in office, they generally have their party behind them in a strong way. And I think that's happening now. And I think it will be for a time, for sure.
Okay,
after his presidency.
Yeah, Kim Alfano, let me turn to you on that. What do you think of Seth Weathers' answer there?
Well, he's obviously enthusiastic, and the party needs enthusiasm in any way we can get it. So we'll take that. I would disagree to a degree that I feel like it's been bifurcated. I feel like what happens at the national level and with Donald Trump is one part of the Republican psyche, and I think what's happening in states and in local races is an entirely different part. And I think Donald Trump is smart enough to realize the longer the proceedings go on in Washington, the more it sounds like, you know, Charlie Brown's parents to the rest of the voting public. So, for candidates and for our party, while we're kind of a schizophrenic a little bit right now, I think that, you know, that makes us have to be very, very, very in tune with what's going on locally in our races and to run local races, which has been kind of the mantra of the party for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
We support our president, but, you know, where I live in the suburbs of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, we may or may not go for Trump again, but I think if we focus on what matters to those of us in the suburbs, we have a shot. And especially for our people that are running locally, they need to do that. And they need to sort of focus on the economy and jobs and the things that really matter, bread and butter issues right here at home.
Yeah, that's a fundamental truth of local races, period. But Kim, you said that the GOP needs enthusiasm in any way it can get it. Tell me more. Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, I think that what we saw in 2018 was a fired up Democrat base and a fire and people willing to get out the vote. And I think in 2016, the Democrats realized Hillary Clinton did nothing about that and they did not turn out. I think as a party, we would be remiss if we didn't also focus on enthusiasm and making sure our voters turn out, quite
Agreed.
Frankly, in any way we can.
Seth Weathers, go ahead.
No, I agree with her on that. Obviously, like she said, in 2018, the Democrats had the fired up base and they showed up and we didn't. But I think that that 2018 was their best showing, in my opinion. So I think that 2020 will be much better for us.
Mm. So I guess what I'm trying to get from both of you here is, what do you think, with Donald Trump as sort of the center of the national level GOP here, what does that mean that the Republican Party stands for now? I mean, Seth Weathers, you said the rule of law, but does that also mean that it stands for ballooning deficits and cutting ties with allies and hardline immigration policies? I mean,
I don't know that you can say we've cut ties with allies, really.
Maybe alienating them a little bit?
Standing up for American first could call that alienating ourselves to a degree, but I don't think that that's anything that the base is opposed to.
Okay.
Well, and you cherry picked that pretty extensively. I mean, you didn't mention cutting regulations and creating jobs and, you know,
right,
boosting the economy,
right,
and the things that actually, you know, as much as I care what the phone call contained. I care more that my 401k is growing because I have a child to put through college. So I mean, you know, that was a very cherry-picked assessment. You know, you have to understand Donald Trump is both theater and policy, and the policies, for the most part, especially domestically, have been very widely appreciated.
Mm. Well, I mean, you say cherry-picked. I was in the middle of the sentence when Mr. Weathers cut me off there.
Sorry.
But it's okay. It's okay, Kim. Your point's taken. Let me go to the callers here. Let's go to Scott, who's calling from Russell Springs, Kentucky. Scott, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I am relatively young, not even 30, Republican, voted for Trump, and I don't believe it's the party of Trump. I believe it's the party of liberty and individuality, and Trump embodies that and stands for that, and we support him through the impeachment because we see it as the establishment, particularly Democratic establishment, trying to oust him for being not one of the establishment, not wanting to be statist and not wanting to bow down to the globalists and the status quo internationally and domestically. We want somebody who's going to support American individuality for each individual American as well as for America as an individual country within the international politics.
Yeah. Scott, thank you so much for your call. So, Kim Alfano, how do you respond to Scott, who calls himself a young Republican, maybe exactly that part of that base that you said you need to drive up enthusiasm with?
Well, you know, it's nice to hear younger voters thinking in broader terms than sort of just the tweet and the short answers that seem to drive our psyche these days. And I am encouraged by that. But he unfortunately is not what we're missing at the moment. We're missing younger voters. We're really missing college educated women in the suburbs. We're missing some, key demographics that, we need to find a way to fire them up. And it's not sadly Trump's personality, and it's not the theater that I spoke of that tends to turn us off. But at the other end of that spectrum, like I said before, fiscal policy and strength and things that matter to us on a daily basis, that's how we're going to motivate that sort of missing segment of what I think are Republicans that are sort of in wait.
So, Kim, help me understand something here, because I heard you a couple of minutes ago when you said that, you know, when you look at some regulatory policy and some economic policy that the Trump administration has enacted, you said over the past couple of years that there's broad support for that. But then just now you also said that there's not enough enthusiasm amongst college-educated women, for example, who ostensibly some of those very policies they ought to be supportive of. So can you help bridge that divide? Why is there that lack of support?
Well, I mean, I think that it's hard to parse the personality with the policy. For you know, some of us that are out here, it's sometimes hard to ignore, you know, the brashness of our president, and we support him and we support his policies, but, you know, personality wise, not all the time. And I think that, you know, again, a lot can be done at the local level and in local races to drive home the success of the policies that are making our families better, that are making our lives freer and more prosperous. But, you know, we also have to do it in the shadow of a presidential campaign, which is going to be, you know, the reality TV part of it. So you just have to, we have to be clear about policies and priorities and the specifics of them, despite what the show might be playing that night.
Okay. And Seth Weathers, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think what she's calling the show is a president that's standing up strongly for the American people for a change. And I understand that that can be brash and off-putting to some people, but we reached a time where that was needed, and that's what the people wanted. They wanted someone that was willing to call BS BS and not run around in circles and give us, you know, political doublespeak. And I think that that's what Trump's given us. And, you know, are some of the tweets over the line or, you know, something along that way, perhaps at times. And, you know, I think that a lot of people jump on those. Trump – anything Trump says gets blown out of – context by the media. You know, he referred to the impeachment as a lynching. Well, then you had like 2 days of the media essentially calling the president a racist and how awful it was, how he was referring to black people being lynched in the South and all kinds of nonsense. And then we go back to 1998 and you've got a slew of Democrats referring to the Clinton impeachment as a lynching. It's an example of just overblowing anything Trump does and says, and the media forms it into this terrible synopsis that the people can latch onto watching their television or listening to a show. And so I think that when you have the media pushing one narrative and they blindly ignore the other side of the Democrats for the same exact words, it blows everything out of proportion. And so it makes it into things that it's simply not.
Mm. You know,
I think he's absolutely right in a lot of ways. And what it's done, I think, is it's actually helping the Republican Party because,
yes,
as I said earlier, it does sound like Charlie Brown's, you know, the adults,
yes,
in a Charlie Brown cartoon. It's become so often and every day everybody's setting their hair on fire about the latest thing that's going to, you know, cause World War III and going to blow the nation up, that it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to move on and watch Netflix. I just, you know, how can the world be imploding every single day? So sometimes
Chris Cuomo's going to be bald by the time election.
Well, you know what? I have to say, and Lisa, I'm going to come back to you here in just a second, but I think it's too bad that the media is an easy target here to blame. And if we're going to talk about the media, we ought to talk broadly about all parts of it, including the president's favorite branch of the media, Fox News. What about the fact that, you know, you call it hair, people with their hair catching on fire, but when the president himself has through fact checking and documentation has more than 12,000 times said things that are demonstrably untrue. That's not hair catching on fire. That's telling the American people these things are not true. Like, I don't know. What's the problem with that?
If you go through of the 12,000, many of those things are what could be considered an exaggeration, and oftentimes he's saying something tongue in cheek and even jovially, and the media takes it as if, I mean, we had him fact checking whether the Rocky photo was doctored or not. I mean, I think that anyone with common sense can see through that.
So do you think that of those 12,000 times, Seth, that all of them were tongue-in-cheek or sort of just like the president being jocular in the moment? Are you saying he tells the truth every single day?
No one does. I've not been through those 12,000 tweets or statements completely for full honesty on my part. But I think that a lot of them, from what I've seen, yes, that is the case a lot of times.
Okay. I want to just jump in and say, I don't agree or disagree on the number. I don't count it and I don't follow it. And I don't agree if he is not telling the truth. What I'm saying is not that he's truthful or not truthful, that everything is DEFCON 5. Everything is, there's no, you know, you play into, as the media and both sides, frankly, Fox News and everybody else, plays into the drama and the show, and there's no more thoughtful discussion about the policies that are underlying it and what actually is happening. I think everything is a battle now, and that's a shame, and I agree with you on that. But, the media is definitely a large player in that problem.
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Winterville, North Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm a base Republican. I'm 68 years old. I'm an extreme right-wing Republican. I absolutely despise Donald Trump. Donald Trump does not care about the Republican Party. He's using the Republican Party for his own fascistic ego. If Mike Pence was the president, we would do the same. The good things would have happened. This drama. We don't need drama for a president. We don't need this alienating people, making fun of people, disparaging people, and treating the woman whose name I can't pronounce, who was the ambassador, Maria, I can't remember her last name.
Ivanovich, yeah.
This is not a presidential man. He is not a decent president. He is an awful man. He's a horrible man, and I hope he's impeached. And I hope Mike Pence becomes president. If he does not, I will go either the Constitution Party or Libertarian, depends on who they nominate. And I wish Justin Amash had not defected from the party and would fight to stay within the party and make us a decent party again.
Yeah. Mike, thank you for your call. Seth Weathers, I hear you. Are you scoffing at Mike?
Scoffing's a good word.
Why?
Well, Mike seems to be, I mean, obviously he was very correct when he says extreme when he's defending Justin Amash and, you know, talking about the Constitution Party. So I think that he's coming from a very extreme place.
But I don't understand why you're scoffing at a lifelong.
Because he's calling the president a fascist. It's ridiculous.
But he's lamenting what he thought, what he once saw as a core of decency in his party that Mike's saying he doesn't see anymore.
But he's clearly bought into a media narrative. He literally was calling the president a fascist. This is just stupidity. Mike probably knows it deep down, but for whatever reason, he has a personal dislike for Trump. That's fine. But to get on air and call the president a fascist, I'm like, where do you even begin with that? It's nonsense.
So, well, you know what, Lisa Desjardins, you've been really patient here. I know you're still there. I'm sorry to keep you holding so long, Lisa.
No, it's a great conversation.
But, I mean, you've been hearing this conversation here on this program. I'm just wondering, does it at all reflect sort of what you hear in the halls of Congress?
Well, I think it's probably better than what you hear in the halls of Congress, because I do believe that the Washington bubble is real and that most of Washington is not really in touch with what's happening in the rest of the country, even though more of Washington tries than gets credit for that. So I think this is probably a superior conversation in a way than you hear from Republicans at the Capitol. But it does reflect this divide between House and Senate, the House more adamant for the president, the Senate Republican still for the president, but less comfortable.
Well, Lisa Desjardins and Seth Weathers and Kim Alfano, hang on here for just a second. We will be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the impeachment inquiry now and the GOP tomorrow, as in the future of the Republican Party. And we want to hear from you. If you're a Republican, what do you think of your party at this moment and its leadership? Do you think the GOP has become the party of Donald Trump? And are you okay with that or not? I'm joined today by Lisa Desjardins. She covers the U.S. Capitol for PBS NewsHour. Seth Weathers is with us from Atlanta, Georgia. He's a Republican political consultant and digital strategist, founder of the political campaign agency Weathers Corp. And he was Georgia State Director for the 2016 Trump campaign. Kim Alfano is with us as well from Landenburg, Pennsylvania. She's a Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. And let's go to Willem, who's calling from Colfax, Wisconsin. Willem, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm not a Republican, but I live in a rural area in Wisconsin. I'm surrounded by farmers who are Republican by tradition. I would say they're more like Eisenhower farmers. A lot of them are older farmers. And to the man from Georgia, I would say my opinion is not informed by the liberal media. It's informed by my observation of the man himself and knowing something about the history of the man himself and the values that I was raised with, none of which I see in this man. He was involved in the largest anti-discrimination suit in U.S. history, a fraudulent university, a fraudulent foundation. He lies every day. He is not a stable genius. His denial of climate change borders on willful ignorance, if not crimes against humanity. And the Republican Party, I want to know, how did the Republican Party go from a man like Lincoln, who wrote the second inaugural Gettysburg Address, who talked about appealing to the better angels of our nature, who when I was a child in school, walked miles to return a penny to the library, Honest Abe. How did we go from that to Donald Trump, who lies every day? And where is the future of the party? Personally, he would not be president without the support of the Republican Party, and I will never forgive the Republican Party for that.
Well, Willem, let me give Seth Weathers, who you're referring to, a chance to just respond to that. And Kim, I'll get to you here, but Willem, Seth, what do you think of what Willem's saying?
Well, I mean, he has it really directly stating it. He just says the president lies, the president's involved in all these things. I mean, he's referring to the Trump Foundation, saying it's an illegal operation. I mean, all they've done is give – they've literally pay out no overhead throughout that foundation. So he seems to just be
the Trump Foundation just put a – just it signed a settlement saying that it fraudulently raised money, saying it was going to give it to veterans. They settled with the state of New York. They never gave that money.
No,
I think that's what he's referring to.
No, they did give that money to veterans. The problem was because he was a presidential candidate that they tried to make a campaign law violation out of it. They did give the money to veterans.
So
the assumption is otherwise, but they gave money to the veterans. That's been proven. The issue was a campaign violation, essentially, because he was running for president at the time.
He fraudulently raised money.
He solicited contributions for veterans organizations while he was campaigning for president. And the battle would have been whether or not that was an ethics violation or not.
Kim Alfano, do you wanted to jump in here?
That wasn't me. That was your reporter. But I mean, I'm glad to say that, I think if anything is legally wrong, it should be dealt with legally. I mean, there's no black or white thing.
Yes. And he paid a fine for raising money for veterans that they donated.
But look, the judge found in the settlement, the judge said the money was raised from the events to further Mr. Trump's political campaign.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They made a campaign violation out of him asking people to give money for veterans.
But it was raised for the campaign is what I'm saying.
It was not for the campaign. The assumption is that it could have helped his campaign because he was doing something good for veterans
while
he was running.
Lisa Desjardins, you're the one who wanted to jump in here, so go ahead.
Oh, well, I think that this is sort of a topic that begs for its own hour, at least, you know, what the president did or didn't do with his foundation. And some of the foundation stories, of course, many come from the Washington Post, predate when he was a candidate. So I think it's something that would be a great topic for another hour.
Okay. Sean, let's go to Sean, who's calling from Lebanon, New Hampshire. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I appreciate the topic. You know, I think Trump had me, thinking about workers' rights was really my, as someone in the trades, I thought that he was protecting working people. And you hear Republicans continue to say that today. And I don't really identify as a Republican, but I got to say in 2020, you know, looking back at the last few years, his billionaire tax cut and his judge appointments and his immigration policies that have hurt working people, and they've stripped away income protections for working people. Trump's never mentioned Medicare for All, which I think there's a lot of research that shows that that's going to save us money over time. And, you know, I want to have security for my family. It's had me much more interested in Bernie Sanders in the last couple months. And you hear people around in working communities, they're kind of burnt out on this favoring Wall Street stuff. And I think Trump is undeniably favoring Wall Street in all of his policies. I'm curious how working Republicans feel about that.
Sean, thank you so much for your call. So Kim Alfano, let me turn to you on that, because I think Sean is one of the kinds of people that you earlier in the show you were saying you were concerned about in terms of enthusiasm or lack thereof among certain parts of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as much as I don't like the president, I want to be able to talk to Republicans with Republican candidates around the country and speak to those base issues locally. And, you know, I'm here as a consultant, not as a supporter or denier of the president one way or another. And as a consultant, I would say, you know, we have to listen to folks like him and be able to have answers and policies, which I believe the Republican Party does and will always, that are supportive and helpful and that bring them along.
Let's go to Dan, who's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Dan, you're on the air.
Hello. I just have a message for the Republican Party. I am 70 years old. I have always been registered as an independent. I consider myself a moderate. I voted in every election that I've ever been eligible to vote in. I have never before voted a straight party ticket until 2020. And in 2018, I changed my affiliation to Democrat and voted a straight Democrat ticket and will do so again in 2020. I am very, very disappointed with the spineless hypocrisy of the Republican leadership.
Dan, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Sheila, who's calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Sheila, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. Your guest panel had mentioned that as long as her 401k was growing, then she was okay with what's happening in the country. I'm a Republican, which is a minority here in New Mexico. I'm a small business owner, and I believe in the Republican Party in regard to what it stands for. But what I don't believe in is that we're giving up our moral and ethics in replacement of self-benefit. And that's what concerns me right now, what's going on with our country.
Sheila, tell me more. Why do you feel that way specifically?
Well, because Trump specifically, the way he acts and represents our country is not how I want to be represented as an American and as a Republican, because turning your back to morals and ethics mm-hmm. and treating individuals poorly, that is not representing of who we are. Mm. And the fact that people are willing to overlook that for self-benefit, that concerns me for our country as a whole.
Yeah. Sheila, don't hang up here, because Kim Alfano, I want to turn back to you, because I do think Sheila is probably exactly the kind of person, more so than our previous caller, that you were talking about
sure.
before. So what would you tell Sheila?
And Sheila, I don't disagree with you, and I think I've said it before. The fact that the theater is happening is not my favorite thing. And as a consultant, I would love to be able to talk to people in the party about policies that I think are helpful to families. And if I made it sound like, you know, it's all about my 401k, I didn't mean to say that. What I meant to say is that it's important that our economy continues to grow, that small business owners like yourself, and my business is very small as well, have the freedom and the ability to grow our companies and employ people. I mean, these are things that the Republican Party has stood for years and years, and pre-Trump and now after Trump. And that my point is that the policies he's actually enacted have been helpful to our economy. And that is the bread and butter kind of issue that people can parse and pull out and say, well, the country is doing well. How that plays out in the presidential race, we'll find out. But at local level, I think we need to support our candidates, and we need to be able to you know, talk to those issues that matter to people again. But I would agree 100%. I hate when the president is divisive, and I hate when he is, you know, bombastic.
So, Sheila, a couple of quick questions for you. First of all, mm-hmm. do you feel that the president's policies as enacted over the past couple of years, do you feel that you're better off than you were in 2016?
Financially, I would say the same, but morally and emotionally and just ethically, no. And that's the concern. I agree that we all need to provide for our families and look to our families to support them. But I don't want my children thinking, you know, as long as you're making a good buck, you're doing well in this country. I want them to have the morals and the leadership that represents who we want to be as a nation. And for our president, the way he's representing us isn't that case. I don't want my children to look at him as a role model, because he's not. Mm. I don't want them to say, okay, as long as you're getting results, that's all that matters. No, what matters is how you treat people, how you are a member of your community, how you present yourself to the rest of the world. And that's not what's happening right now.
Right. So, Sheila, don't hang up again, because I want to turn back to Seth Weathers. I mean, Seth, Sheila's talking about how she feels that the party, and I guess sort of the head of the party, if in name, the president of the United States, has to stand for something more than even just economic policy, and that she doesn't feel that this is that's what the president is doing. And you can hear how that's troubling her. She's a lifelong Republican. I mean, what would you say to Sheila?
I think that the president is standing for a lot of things. That I think that being bombastic and those things doesn't mean he's also not fighting for the very things the Republican Party has fought for years and wanted to accomplish, whereas Trump's actually doing it.
But you see her, you hear her concern about ethics, about morals, about the example that the president is setting. And these are Sheila's words. And Sheila, I hope I'm not sort of misparaphrasing you here, but setting for her children. And she does not like that. Is that a concern for you, Seth?
I think it'd be better if she could give specific examples, because I'm not really following what her point is.
Sheila, do you have an example you want to give of something you don't like the president, what he's done?
Well, there are several examples, but just how he treats women. I have teenage daughters. I don't like how he treats women in regard to the comments, and we can go over specific comments. But the way he treats women, I don't like how his Twitter, I mean, just as a leader, I'm also a veteran, and so I know chain of command. I can't respect him as a military person because of what he does with our military and bypassing. I'm also a former intelligence analyst. So the fact that he bypasses the intelligence community, he doesn't respect the military.
He's the commander-in-chief.
He doesn't know.
So he didn't bypass anyone. He's the top of the command. So what you're stating there is 100% incorrect. The commander-in-chief doesn't bypass the military. The military could attempt to bypass the president.
What I'm saying is, not bypassing, he is disregarding the people in the military community. And
I think the military community as a whole would greatly disagree.
Well, so Mr. Weathers, let me... Sheila, first of all, hang on, because I do want to give you a proper thanks. But Seth Weathers, we could debate the military part of this. But what about what Sheila said about the things that the president says about women?
There's things of certainly – he says the same things about Rosie O'Donnell as he has at some point Ted Cruz or anyone else he's ever gone up against. And so I think he's very gender not neutral when it comes to who he goes after they go after him, who he responds to. He's also the guy that's appointed the first female head of the CIA, the first female campaign manager to win a presidency, a long line of other female appointments that you haven't seen that are literally first in history.
Well, Sheila, thank you so much for your call and for bearing with my additional questions there. Thank you so much, Sheila. You're still with me?
Yes.
Okay. I really appreciate you listening, and I really appreciate you calling, Lisa Desjardins.
Yeah.
This is a lot, but
a lot. Well, you know, listening to this, though, Meghna, it makes me reflect back on the Clinton impeachment again. So clearly, during the Clinton impeachment, the idea of the president's morals was a key point for Republicans. That was one reason they say they felt like they had to go after this President Clinton, that he had lied, that lying was a problem within the military rank structure they brought out, and also there was a lot of testimony about the moral fiber of the country and concern about the moral fiber of the country. And so it is interesting, of course, that now those concerns are coming from people who, again, oppose a president, but there are Republicans who instead are saying, no, let's keep focused on kind of the legal arguments here and not the moral arguments. So it's a similar debate, but those making the different points of view have switched.
Well, Lisa Desjardins covers the U.S. Capitol for PBS NewsHour. Lisa, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And Seth Weathers, Georgia State Director for the 2016 Trump campaign and founder of the political campaign agency Weathers Corp. Seth Weathers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Kim Alfano, Republican strategist and president and CEO of Alfano Communications. Thank you, Kim, for being with us today.
Thanks, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.